Are you missing him? Let's see, who's that one there?
Carolyn Schroeder.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So she's the only one that... Theoretically, should be here shortly.
Yeah.
Like an exercise.
Okay, I'll open the Transportation Commission meeting for February 15th. And the first thing we have on the agenda are the minutes for the January meeting, which I submitted some minor changes. I guess you got those.
Yes, I have those, yes.
Does anyone else have any changes to the minutes for January? All right, can I get a...
Move to adopt?
Yes. Second?
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Passed. Okay. Updates to receive. I'd like to get update for the funding update, budget update, Vision Zero, and commercial parking study. Anybody else? Okay. Just start with those.
So the funding will start with WMATA. So things haven't changed a whole lot since the last time we talked about WMATA. There's the budget still stands now. They have a $290 million shortfall that they're working through. There's potential for that number to go up. There's potential for that number to go down. There's a lot of discussions over the next couple months. Regarding the budget and what type of changes might be made to it. The public comment period closed a couple weeks ago. I can't remember the day off the top of my head, but closed. I know they had a pop-up here at King Street and a couple other places to try to get folks out. One of the things that will happen is staff from WMATA will put together a public comment period report that will go to the board, and that's basically where they'll consolidate, you know, all the comments they heard, what they heard online, in person, and the folks that actually showed up to testify. It's January 30th was when they had the public hearing. So they'll take, based on that and any questions, comments, you know, things that people had, you know, they'll take that into consideration. We've received a few emails internally at the city, just folks, you know, different comments about, you know, concerns about different things that are up for elimination. I think one thing to point out is the list that is out there for bus cuts is not permanent. It's not decided yet. Basically, it's up there. It's up for consideration. Nothing has been decided. So if you hear any more about that, some people think it's already been approved and adopted, and it hasn't. So that's just what's up for consideration now.
If we have neighbors or people who are concerned about particular cuts and want to, should we direct them to make recommendations to someone? Should they reach out to city staff? Should they reach out to WMATA to voice their interest or concern?
The public comment period is closed.
Okay.
Officially, I mean, we can always just send comments along to WMATA.
Yeah, I mean, we also did an e-news that went out to, you know, 10,000 recipients reminding people of the.
Though it's not decided, the bus cut list, it's also too late for anyone to say anything about it.
Just like a lot of bureaucratic processes, they provide a cutoff period for their public comments because they try to include their public comments in the actual budget.
Okay. So what they've seen may not be the last version, but it's really being decided at a different level at this point.
And it, there will be WMATA board meetings at which they could always attend.
Okay. Yeah. So, okay, later on.
Mm-hmm. I guess the next one was for Smart Scale. I think we talked about this briefly in January, but just provides a little bit more information. The city submitted 5 projects for funding. 4 of them were recommended for to be included in the funding program going forward. The only project that fell off the list was a multimodal bridge, but all of the other ones scored well enough to move forward. The 2 transit projects we had scored the highest, the first one being the West End Transitway Southern Towers alignment, and then the DASH facility expansion and the purchase of some expansion buses. Those are number 1 and 2. They scored really well. I talked to folks at DRPT, and of course they reminded me that nothing is guaranteed yet, but it's a pretty strong application that we had in there. It scored well, and the next step is that they'll be working through a couple funding scenarios over the next couple months. They'll hold a public hearing in April. Based on the public hearing and the fact that it's a political board that makes the funding decisions for it, there might be some moving of projects around depending on the feedback they get, et cetera. And then with the anticipation that the plan for Smart Scale will be approved in June. It will be included, wrapped into the 6-year improvement plan that the state puts out. So the funding years are pretty far out. They're FY22 and FY23. So we're several years out until the funding becomes available. So we'll be looking forward to seeing what their proposed program is. One thing I know that they've been very adamant about is with this grant particular with Smart Scale is that we make sure that this is our responsibility as a city to make sure that we get these implemented on the schedule that we said. They're very strong. We don't want to have extensions, different things like that. So,
and they published a dashboard.
Excuse me?
The dashboard that they got published.
Yes.
For the projects that they're tracking us very closely.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Probably the reason for that is they want to make sure the money's spent, right?
Yes. Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. So they want to make sure that when they're getting out there, they're getting it spent as fast as possible.
Right.
Before you move on, a follow-up question. So the multimodal bridge, and I know you mentioned this to us already in a previous meeting, that it didn't score high enough.
Correct.
As we move forward, I presume we'll be putting it into a batch of things to apply for funding again in the future. Have we gotten any feedback, or do we have a sense of what we would do to make it look better, to score better?
One of the pieces of feedback we've gotten is simply that projects that already have funding associated with them typically do better. So, you know, West End Transitway is a good example of that. That project does have additional funding through the Northern Virginia Transit Authority already, so that helped when we made. So what we would want to do going forward is look for developer contributions for that bridge. That would certainly help make us more competitive next time. I think if there's other grant-funded opportunities, we would continue to seek those out. And we will likely have another opportunity to apply for this. We don't know exactly when the time frame is of when those applications will be due, but we are told that there'll be another round of Smart Scale funding, so we could apply again. Is that next?
Yeah, I think the intention is that they'll do a call for projects every 2 years.
Every 2 years.
So we applied last fall, so fall 2016, so probably fall 2018 is when they'll do another round. Mm-hmm. And then that would be for 24 and 25, FY 24 and 25.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. It's good to know as we're seeing these things happen. Like, what are we going to do to make our proposals better in the future? Yeah. Thank you.
No worries. And the last one has to do with DRPT. Every year we submit capital projects and operating assistance applications to them. Basically what happens is, depending on how much money DRPT has, they develop a formula across the state that they'll match a certain amount of state money with money that we invest in capital projects. Our ongoing ones are usually bus replacement over a DASH. So whenever we spend X amount for a bus, they reimburse a percentage of that as local capital assistance. Same thing with operating costs. We submit an application for that. And the other big one is the TDM operations grant. That funds two staff positions here that run our TDM program. So all of those were submitted on February 1st by the deadline, and they're in and they're under review with the state. We haven't heard anything back yet, but so far so good.
All right, I think the next item that the chairman asked for an update on was the budget. And so the budget will be presented to the city council on the 21st. The city manager's budget will be proposed next Tuesday. And then there'll be a public meeting on February 23rd at Beatley Library. There'll be a number of work sessions by topic, so there will be a transportation-focused work session. It's called Livable Green is typically what that session is entitled. And that will make sure that the commission has those the date of that meeting once it's released. There'll also be an add-delete session on the 25th of April, and then the final add-delete on May 1st. So the budget's scheduled to be adopted on the 4th. And so because the budget will be released next week, we'll be coming to you in March and having a presentation on the budget specifically regarding transportation. And then we'll also have a public hearing through the Transportation Commission on the budget as well.
Okay. Vision Zero will be the next item.
So Vision Zero, we recently went to the city council and had a resolution for Vision Zero policy that was adopted, that was endorsed by the commission prior to that. We'll now be starting the action plan for Vision Zero, and that will be an important sort of milestone for us to lay out kind of what our game plan is for meeting the goal of zero deaths and serious injuries by 2028. So we'll be working with many different departments across the city to come up with this action plan. Our first meeting with those departments is 2 weeks from now. So we'll be periodically through this consent agenda updating you on our progress on how that's going. We'll also be having public meetings this spring on that topic to get feedback from the public in terms of our draft action.
Okay. The project management team, does that consist mostly primarily the city folks?
It's going to be in interdepartmental effort across the city. So we'll have a lead project manager, which will be Ray Hayhurst, our complete streets coordinator. But we'll also have core members of the project team, like the police department, information.
That's
technology.
Different than the interdepartmental.
You're talking about the consultant team, or?
Well, they talked about the project management team itself, yeah. And then there's the interdepartmental task force.
Yeah.
So they're different.
So we typically have sort of like a smaller group of transportation employees that is likely, and in planning and zoning employees that would probably be on a smaller group to kind of look at the project every week or every day. And then we have a larger group that kind of comes in at key decision points and gives us feedback before we get too far along. So that's probably the difference that you have.
Have they met yet?
They have. The interdepartmental group has not met yet, but the project team does meet regularly.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay. And that basically, the interdepartmental task force basically is again, city departments, agencies, et cetera.
It's a
health
really
department and fire department.
It's a big
right.
initiative across the city, and so we want to make sure all those departments have buy-in and have a piece of that action plan that they'll be implementing. So.
And they'll probably meet monthly or as needed?
I would say as needed. We're starting out with a meeting 2 weeks from now. I think we need to map out with that group kind of what would be the best schedule, but I would say, you know, 3 or 4 meetings before we start to then get more specific and have a draft action plan that will be reviewed by the public.
They mentioned stakeholders, and, you know, I guess, is there any stakeholders on the interdepartmental group?
Well, there'll be a lot in terms of, yes, we have to.
I mean, all the ones I'm aware of are departments.
Well, the departments and the agencies will be the ones charged with implementing the action plan. So
Right.
Yes, they.
So the stakeholders are basically would be those that are going to show up at the public meetings then.
Correct, but I think also when we say stakeholders, we're also including the Transportation Commission, who will be involved in this, and so it's a variety of.
All right, so the Transportation Commission's input, would I say it would be appropriate for you to give us an update on the progress of the action plan on a monthly basis?
That would be, we could do that through the consent. That would be no problem. I think we can plan to do that anyway.
Okay, I mean, it wouldn't have to be, it's just, you know, here's what we've done in the last month.
Have it in this consent agenda so that you can pull it if you want, and we'll also provide it, obviously, ahead of time in writing so you can see it.
Okay. Yeah. I guess one of the concerns I have is the public meetings seem to be further down the path before they take any input.
I don't think that would be the case. I think... So we just had the resolution adopted, so we were just...
Nobody's met yet.
I don't think...
Understand.
I mean, I think our first public meeting's likely going to be in April, so it'll be pretty early in the process, and we'll get feedback before we get too far along. We don't... As you know, with the city, we tend to have a lot of...
Somewhere in April is kind of... I know you don't have a schedule yet, but...
We don't. We're working on it.
Okay. But just to let you know, you probably already know, but just let the commission know that... Alexander Bepak has a Vision Zero subcommittee that's actually looking at best practices for other action plans. They've got a list of probably a dozen action plans, and they're looking at those that best practices, basically. If you look at, there's different sections of the action plan, and if you look at all of them, then you say, wow, this one looks like the best. So anyhow, so they're just putting that, and they'll probably have a letter at some point saying these are suggestions.
That's welcomed. So, I mean, I think we...
Okay, just so everybody
even if you
knows.
Have it now and you want to give it whatever you have now.
They're working on a letter. Already.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate
it'll be
it.
Soon.
It'll be soon. Okay, great.
Rather than April. Can I just ask a specific question? I'd like to hear more about staff. Vision of how you're going to use the community workshops.
Yes.
So I don't know if you've got some ideas in mind already.
I don't have all that information with me tonight, but what I could do is if I could go into more detail for you next month when we come back. I don't think we have mapped out yet the full agenda, but I think we want that to be very interactive. We've talked about having sort of like an open house format where people can go to different stations and give input. We've also talked about maybe having some online measures that allow people to sort of graphically through maps or other tools and using technology versus just having a static meeting. So I think there's a couple of things that we're mapping out, but I don't have like the specific agenda yet.
Yeah. And some of that is being developed in part of the interdepartmental war plan and put that input.
Yeah, we're just getting started here, so.
Yeah, it's just the kind of thing, so I think it would be great for you to give us those updates monthly. If it works for your timeline to specifically speak to how you're going to use the public outreach process to get to your objectives, like to get you the feedback you need at the right steps in the process, that would be great to hear about. Because there are different ways of interacting with the public or creating a useful workshop environment. It all depends on what you need at that time. And so I'd love to hear more about as you get further in that planning process.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Where it says the comprehensive analysis of traffic deaths and injuries in Alexandria, has that been done before?
So we've definitely kept we have a pretty detailed database, a crash database that the police department keeps for crashes. But what we want to start doing in more detail is looking at the locations where we have repetitive problems and seeing if there are targeted solutions that we can apply to fixing those problems. I think maybe digging a little bit deeper than just here is a problem location, but looking more carefully at the type of crash and if there are certain measures that we can do both short-term and long-term. So I think the action plan is intended to be something that we can do, things that we can do immediately, but then also things that we can do in the longer term.
Yeah, that's one of the first things you want to do as far as the action plan is to get good data. That's one of the things we found that the other action plans pointed out, that, you know, it's some kind of confusing. What we found out is the police department collects data on crashes, the fire department collects, and then the health, you know, the hospitals collect it as a health buffer. And they don't always match. Mm-hmm. Some collect data that the other ones don't. Another way of collecting data is a close crash. In other words, it didn't happen, but it's, you know, if you have several people report that, boy, this is a hazardous intersection, then, you know, that's something we should take note of. It's these kind of things that you have to look at and try to put together. And that takes time putting together because, you know, we've looked at it, and, you know, it's a big elephant to tackle. But it takes time. I know the district's in their second year of Vision Zero, and their accident or crash statistics have actually gone up. And the reason, you know, is it takes time to implement all these. Mm-hmm. You know, you can start doing some of the things, but probably the big thing that makes a difference is when you start doing engineering changes to intersections. And that costs money, and it takes time. You know, you can put it on the books and plan for it and budget and all that, and it doesn't happen in a year's time. It takes time. And then once you get a few years, then you see progress. New York has done the same thing. They're on the downslope because they've had it a few years, and it's working. So anyway.
But we'll have a good baseline.
That's exactly what we have to do, is get a good solid baseline, because you can't measure it until you have good data. And that's kind of one of the first tasks that you have to do, is you have to have something to measure it by. So, okay.
I actually have a comment on this. I've seen a lot of these sort of plans come forward, and I think one of the pieces that I've noticed has missed in others is like driver education. And I think that's a big part of this, and like BIPAC, and there's a lot of other groups that are involved in this, but in all the conversation, I didn't hear anyone specifically mentioned it, drivers. I would suspect that that's upwards of 80%. They're involved in these accidents. So I would just encourage staff to, as they put things together, to start looking at what that is. You know, we all have to pay our car taxes every year. Maybe we get a little sheet, like whatever it is.
Yeah, that's, education is one of the big pieces of making it work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's basically a culture change to get everybody to think. You know, when you're sitting at a red light and you want to make a right on red, you're always looking left. What you easily forget is, okay, it's clear now, and then there's a pedestrian. And that's how the last pedestrian got killed. So these are things that we have to change, and it takes time. So, and one other thing is there is a Vision Zero Summit, which I think everybody's seen. Hillary Orr's going, Councilman Levine's going, and John's going, as far as I know. So
I'm also probably going to be speaking.
Yeah. I'm going too, so. Oh, you're going to be speaking?
Yeah, someone from Lava reached out to me, and I was like.
Ah, Renee?
Yeah.
Okay, well. Good. Okay, anything else on Vision Zero? We got commercial parking study. You can get some data on that.
Did you want an update on the commercial park? Okay. So I know a few of you attended our kickoff for that effort last week. Thank you for coming. We will be convening that advisor group in the next few weeks. We're in the process now of reaching out to the advisor group members and notifying them, and then getting a first meeting date. So we'll be starting that effort, and then periodically coming to the Transportation Commission to update you. As you know, this is the, I think most of you are familiar with the study, but this is the update of the ordinance for the commercial side of the ordinance. We've already updated the residential multifamily side. So we are going to be collecting a lot of occupancy data as part of this to make sure that we're understanding the existing needs of commercial properties, and using that data to come up with some recommendations for how to move forward. So we'll continue to keep you updated on this. Any questions?
Okay, that pretty much takes care of the updates on the consent item. Okay, agenda item number four, or commission updates number three. Around the table, any updates?
I think you covered the commercial parking kicked off.
Yeah.
I don't know when we're meeting yet. I did send Katie a note, though, just being like, hey, let's get the calendar set so I don't have to freak out about what I'm scheduling in the next couple months. So I can't wait to get it on my calendar.
Yeah, yours is on there later anyway. Yeah. So, anything from the traffic?
Nope, we don't meet until Monday.
Oh, you're after us.
Yeah,
okay.
We meet after you guys. So.
All right, then we are on item number four, which is the interdepartmental work program.
All right, I'm going to introduce Carrie Beach from Planning and Zoning, Division Chief for the Long Range Planning Division. She's going to give an overview of the work plan. Would you like me to go?
Hello, everyone. All right. I apologize. Some of you have heard this before. We've already been to the Planning Commission and the City Council, so I'll try not to be too redundant, but I want to make sure that those of you who haven't heard it get a chance to hear it. So each fall, all of the departments that are involved in long-range planning type work, planning and zoning, TNES, Office of Housing, Parks, ADP and others get together and start to come up with a draft long-range work plan for the coming fiscal year. So this fall we did work for FY18. And the work that goes into that is, you know, each department comes with, okay, here's what we've been working on this past year. Here are some of the things that came out of those processes. Here's some feedback we heard from the community about priorities. Here's what our various commissions have prioritized, or what we've heard from City Council and the strategic plan type work. And everybody sort of, we hash that out and come up with a draft for the coming year that we then bring to Planning Commission, City Council, and Transportation Commission. The feedback that we get from that then informs the city manager's proposed budget, and then ultimately we bring back a final work program that City Council will approve in May or June for the upcoming fiscal year. The copy you guys have is small and black and white, so I did bring you all some color copies if you'd like them. So just to walk you through this bar chart. The area in blue is fiscal year 18, so you'll see we are completing quite a few items this spring. I'm going to skip ahead just for a second. We've finished the city strategic plan. We're finishing up metro station planning, Old Town North small area plan, North Potomac Yard small area plan, the long range educational facilities plan, also a office competitiveness study that we're doing, and then some projects that we've already begun, we will finish up next fiscal year. That's the list that you see there on the right. Eisenhower East Phase 1, I'm going to go into some detail about that in a second. For you guys, you know about the parking standards project. I think those are the most relevant in terms of transportation. I just didn't know how to go backwards. So I wanted to tell you a little bit about Eisenhower East small area plan update. So this plan was originally approved in 2003, and since then we've had a number of minor amendments to the plan, a number of projects which have shifted some density around, and this past year we had three owners of three blocks within the plan area come to us and say, we're very interested in redeveloping, but we're going to need some amendments to the plan. So we agreed to do that, and then suddenly the plan started expanding, and everyone else came to the table and said, "Yep, me too, me too, me too." And currently there already is about 6 million square feet of unbuilt capacity in that plan. We also think that there are probably some significant studies that need to be completed, infrastructure-related sewer transportation studies that would need to be completed if we did this larger, you know, the Me Too box who raised their hand. So what we're proposing is addressing this update in two phases. The first one will be the first three blocks who really are just, they're not interested in additional square footage. They're just interested in a potential conversion of land use. In most cases, from office to either residential or retail or hotel. As you know, the office market is what it is, and many developers are interested in a conversion. What we're doing now is conducting a land use analysis to see how appropriate this is, given the market, given the desire of this plan to have a balanced mix of land uses. We do know that plan, the Hoffman Town Center area, really does lack a certain level of amenities and a certain level of there and vitality. So we think that adding retail and hotel and some other uses is a good thing, but we are working on a land use analysis right now. We just we have a consultant helping us with that right now. So we would finish that up and go to Planning Commission, City Council in September. Then phase two would focus on the additional blocks that want significantly more square footage. And we're proposing that we start that plan in 2020. We've had some pushback on that from a number of the property owners who want us to do it right away. But we think there are a number of reasons why waiting makes sense. One is that we have a lot of unbuilt square footage in the plan area already. Another is the studies that we know need to be accomplished in order to make sure that we can accommodate this additional development, and that needs to, you know, be prioritized along with all the other work in the work plan. We also have shown in the past that if there's a significant office GSA type tenant, we can move very quickly to respond to those kind of RFPs. We've done that with others in the past, and we can easily do that again. So we also have a number of studies that have already been in line and have been bumped already a couple of times, and we think it's appropriate to let those plans proceed as well. So that's our current approach.
Can I ask you a question about this one?
Yeah.
So when you look at a request like this, it seems like what's happening is it's a property owner request. They see the plan and they see what they want to do isn't in line with the plan, so they want the city to take another look and maybe change the plan to better align with what they want. But that's different than a special project opportunity just coming through. They want something to happen and they ask for variances or, you know, some difference from the adopted document on their own, like on the based on the merits of their project, like convince City Council to say it's okay. It seems like this is a lot of work for staff and the community to sort of re-look at and open up as many times as properties want to come in and ask for. Potomac Yard Small Area Plan is doing the same thing, essentially. There's a change in what seems feasible or what the property can actually do, the owners can do, based on phasing and leases even, and they come and they want changes to be made to accommodate that. Has there been staff discussion on how to make this sort of thing more sustainable in the future? Like, is there something we're missing as far as how we do these things that can make them easier? Or, I don't know if easier is the right word, but
I think in both cases, I think from staff's perspective, in both cases, there are good reasons to open up the plans and look at them more holistically rather than just having it be a developer-driven piecemeal approach.
Okay.
In Potomac Yard, looking at different things that would make it still be consistent with the intent of the plan, but maybe some changes that we think, as the south of Potomac Yard was built out, maybe, you know, Potomac Avenue, for example, the width and alignment of that road, you know, based on the community's input and our input, we and our staff thinking, you know, we thought that was an appropriate change. And same with Eisenhower East. There are, you know, there are, we think, some appropriate tweaks that we'll need to really dig in on with this plan. And one is the retail strategy and the land use mix overall. We think that will need to be changed. Or at least tweaked to some degree. Right now, the retail strategy is, we don't have a lot of confidence that it's right for now. Mm-hmm. Things have changed a lot, and amenities have become so much more important to attracting office and creating this full, vibrant community. And then also the land use mix. Office is taking up less square footage than it did before, and so, you know, and in fact, a lot of, for example, Block 19, which we recently toured, they have something like 50% of the people who live in that building also work there, so are working from home. So things like that that are really changing the way our communities are built out and are being lived in, I think are things that we want to take into account.
So you're using it as an opportunity, really, to bring the community perspective onto a potential change in an area instead of just let it be a developer-driven, needs-based thing.
Exactly. And also thinking about economic development and how we can best leverage or best set ourselves up for, you know, keeping the city economically sustainable and taking the most advantage we can of our metro stations and our existing resources.
Yeah, I find it kind of surprising. I know right now the commercial space availability is, percentage-wise, it's pretty high. I think it was 17% or something. But I know this stuff is like 5 years down the road before anything gets finished.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a minimum. So they're looking at it long-term. But the new building there in the Hoffman Center?
NSF. National Science Foundation.
Oh, that's the NSF building?
I think they're scheduled to open up this fall.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're still working on it inside.
Yeah,
I just see the building. I don't know what's going on inside.
Yeah, that's NSF.
But yeah, and apparently they're going to build something else in the parking lot there. The north.
That's one of the blocks 4 and 5.
That's one of the blocks there.
Top north of that sort of north central of Eisenhower East.
So the developers at least looking long term, saying, yeah, we're ready to go because they see 5 years down the road that there's going to be a demand for that. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And you know, buildings like the Victory Center that aren't walkable to the, you know, that might be a hard one to fix, but
yeah.
Okay.
So you might also recall that the Mount Vernon study has been on the work program for a few years now in the out years. It has gotten shifted further a couple times. We were looking at it as an update to the Mount Vernon Avenue business plan and the Arlandria plan, so really looking at the avenue in a holistic way from Glebe to Braddock, essentially. Maybe it doesn't go all the way to Braddock, I think it goes to Nelson, but you know, looking at both neighborhoods. What we're proposing with this work program is to sequence the plan update with the pedestrian safety improvements that TNES is already looking at in the corridor. We think that's a good way to have the plan build on what's being done, what needs to be done right away, and will be done over the next couple of years. But that will be a way for the community to see, you know, what has been done and know what needs to be prioritized when we begin to work with them on what to do during the plan update. What we've identified so far is sort of three main areas we think we would look at in the plan update. One is district competitiveness, so how this corridor will remain competitive as Potomac Yard and Oakville Triangle come online. So what are some things that they can do to set themselves apart, or continue to set themselves apart, and remain a vital district. Another is to take another look at the development sites that were identified in the two plans and see if there are some updates to the recommendations in the plan that can help them be more developable. An example would be we call it the Safeway Datatel site. I don't know if that's an old name for it, but it's essentially the parcel that's at the corner of Glebe and Mount Vernon on the northwest side. So it's now like something imports in Orlandria, if that rings a bell. It's one of the major development sites.
A lot of parking lots in that area. Yeah, right now there's a paint store back there.
And then there's Mount Vernon Village Center, and there's a couple in Delray. A lot of car auto sales sites in Delray. And so looking at those and saying, you know, do we need to refresh what we have recommended for these sites? The third would be to look again, take another look and refresh the implementation priorities and funding for the two plans to see, you know, what kind of refresh we can do on those. And then the third major plan that we will be working on, well, Eisenhower East Phase 1 will have finished. I should say this will be the second, because in terms of sequencing, we're going to be looking at the Route 1 South affordable housing strategy. This has been on the work program for a couple of years now as well. And it is time sensitive. There are a couple of three blocks of affordable housing northeast of that gas station that have some affordable terms of affordability are expiring, and so the Office of Housing and Planning and Zoning will be working together to look at a strategy for maintaining the affordability for those housing blocks, working with some nonprofit developers potentially, but looking at ways that we can maintain the affordability for the long term, so extending it another 30 years. Also, we will be looking at some of the commercial sites, including gas stations, but also there's that, there's a couple of
Scuba store, yeah.
And there's a window store. Looking at, should those sites decide to redevelop, what would be the guidelines for those?
Yeah.
And then also looking at streetscape and pedestrian improvements for that gateway, which is an important gateway to the city. I think I've covered most of these. They're in your bar chart. I don't think we need to necessarily go into any detail on those. I will say that ongoing implementation is another big piece of what we do, and each time we approve a plan, we add another one to the list of plans that needs to be monitored and implemented over time. For FY18, we'll be focusing a large majority of our effort on Old Town North and Eisenhower West, Landmark, and Dorn. But there will be work to do in North Potomac Yard with the updates to the CBD zoning and design guidelines, and you'll see a number of other projects that fall into that ongoing implementation category up here. So I'm happy to answer any other questions if you have them, or later.
Actually, I got one I was going to bring up later, but I've been reading about the expansion of the Alfred Street Baptist Church, and I'm just wondering where that's at in the process, because one, it's a traffic and parking board problem, because as that church expands, it takes up, it creates the parking problems, and also as it expands, it's a transportation issue, the way I look at it. But I don't know where it's at as far as in the Planning Commission.
Well, it's actually next door right now, the BAR, Board of Architecture Review is considering that this evening.
It's also quiet in there.
But just to differentiate, these are the larger planning.
Oh, right.
Processes, not separating that. That's a development case that'll come through, like the
right.
The
I bet. I just want.
Review process.
figured she knew the answer to that.
Yeah,
but if it's next
it's
door.
I don't know when it's scheduled to come to Planning Commission.
Okay, yeah, sure. it goes to
it's got
BR
some,
first.
It's got some work to do, so.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that
okay.
it's been,
yeah.
this wouldn't be the first time it's gone to the Board of Architecture Review. It's been before, but yeah, I think
it's... Eventually, it come to us as an issue, I'd assume.
No, it because, as Jan mentioned, it's a development, it's a specific
it's
development case. It'll become before the
pretty
planning
much planning commission's issue. And when they look at it, they take...
It's a development case, just like...
okay.
You know, I'm trying to think of a good example.
They had to do a transportation study just like
right.
any other...
As part of that.
Like
part
the waterfront
of that. Okay.
developments that are that come before
won't
the planning
commission. Won't go to the Johnson Park Board either. It'll be reviewed in the normal development review process.
So most of the issue is in there right now. The people that...
Well, that's one piece.
Okay.
Right
now, that's the architectural part.
Right. But there's a little, yeah.
Well,
okay.
Hopefully, I mean, ideally, you want the project to, by the time it gets to the Planning Commission, to have through its own community process and it's working with the BAR to resolve the neighborhood's issues.
Those
about
issues,
the potential
right.
impacts it's going to have. So hopefully, that product that we see is designed to not have overspill impacts that would affect the traffic and parking board. I mean, ideally, there isn't just like a onslaught of requests for changes to what the street parking is about in order to mitigate it. It's something that they are doing in advance.
Yeah, and the community has been before the traffic and parking board on issues of spillover parking, and the church is aware about it and has worked very closely with the community through staff to try and address it. They do have a lot that they use. They rent off of a business, and they run a bus on Sundays and stuff. And they're not all the way there yet, but the church is aware of it, and the community is too. So
okay. Absolutely. Okay, any other questions? Thank you for the presentation. Yeah, I assume that the planning does all this planning. That's part of somebody's job just to keep track of this.
We're the ringleader, but we,
yes.
you know, we're working.
Well,
you
coordinate it, right.
These,
I like
that. It's
you are the ringleaders.
I'm the circus.
One way to
I
put
mean
it.
The,
yeah, that's.
The yeah.
Yeah, that's trying to keep nice. Track all these projects and when they. I mean, you can see by looking at this, that's quite a task.
So some of these, though, I mean, they're noted on here as funding dependent, and those are just decisions that get made in this. Budget cycle.
It gets,
correct.
Exactly. Yep. And I the Route 1 project, we are also asking for, right now we're applying for grant funding from VHDA.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we'll hear from them.
Do you hear that before or after City Council has to decide?
You know, I think we would have heard by, I think we'll know soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Carrie. Well, Carrie's probably going to stick around for the next one, but if you don't mind. And I know, I apologize, I know a few of you have already been, Ryan serves on the advisory group, so has seen this presentation, and Melissa and Jerry were at the last meeting, but wanted to make sure that the commission was aware of this and give you an update on this plan. This is the North Potomac Yard Small Area Plan update. We'll be coming before you later this spring for endorsement of this plan before it goes to the Planning Commission and City Council. The reason for this plan update is that we have received, I think actually Melissa explained it well, but we have some development applications for what we call in the first phase of North Potomac Yard, and that's everything east of Potomac Avenue between the Metrorail tracks and Potomac Avenue. We have an application that's before us, and as part of that process, we are needing to relook at the plan. So we're to kind of conceptually break it up. The plan is overall 7.5 million square feet of new development, and that's for North Potomac Yard. But it has two pieces: the first phase east of Potomac Avenue, the second phase between Route 1 and Potomac Avenue. And I'll show you a graphic, which will help in a second. Actually, let's see. Oh, now I'm now going to be able to go back. So I kind of just touched on this, but why we're doing this study and with the plan updates, we often find that we did the plan in 2010 and some things have changed, such as implementation of the Metroway, and that's a key difference. The development in South Potomac Yard has come online, so that's been occupied. We also are having the developer come to us, the applicant come to us with a mix of land uses that's slightly different than what was approved in the plan. So they're looking at slightly more office space, and they're also making more specific assumptions about the type of development. So that also causes us to look at it again. And then we have had some changes to both the pedestrian and bicycle network, as well as the roadway. So those are all important pieces of it. And with any study, we have a couple of layers that we look at. I'm not going to go into great detail because I know that all of you have probably heard this types of things before. But we look at the existing conditions for all modes of transportation. We factor in unbuilt but approved development and those transportation conditions, and as well as any improvements that we're going to make with that.
And then claps about an architectural review, but okay.
Something good must have
And then wow, lastly, that archway.
That should happen more in these meetings. Right. So then last, we basically look at the future development that's under consideration. So these are the network improvements that were approved with the Oakville Triangle development. And they're just, I'm not going to go through all of them, but I do think it's important to note, that a new roadway is proposed. That's item D here. That's a north-south road from Calvert to East Glebe. And so we've called out these different changes. Obviously, the metro station's a big part of what we want to look at when we're looking at the new development. Making some intersections all-way, such as item B here, which is East Reed. So that allows cars, pedestrians, bikes to go through at all approaches. This just gives you an idea of how, when we've done the study, we're definitely looking at lots of modes of transportation, and we're assuming that trips will be taken by metro and by walking and biking, and we also have obviously the vehicle trips too, but this is a really good site in that we have a lot of accessibility for all modes of transportation, so it's a good site to work with through this project. I just wanted to kind of highlight through the small area plan update, we'll be having a new set of connectivity. So you can see in the yellow are the roads that are proposed or that are planned, and then the red is the existing. So we have an opportunity to provide more transportation options for all modes of transportation for the project. And this graphic kind of gives you an idea of the bike network. So the dark solid green is the existing network that's out there today, and then the dotted are the planned bicycle facilities. So you can see that we're planning a robust network that got east, west, north, south. And the actual type of bicycle facility will have to be fleshed out kind of as we get deeper into the design. The smaller plan's just kind of looking at it at a high level. But we definitely want to make sure that the bike facilities are, where we can provide sort of protected bike lanes or cycle tracks, we can do that, or trails. One thing that came up in the last meeting of the advisory group, last meeting was this connection, which is something that is actually conditioned in the plan that the developer will provide. I know that was a question at the meeting was, could this connection be provided? And the answer is that it's actually already in their requirements to provide it. It will likely happen at the second phase because they have a trigger that they have to, a land use trigger that they have to reach in order for them to have to build that. And that's essentially a connection that goes to the Mount Vernon Trail from the trail that goes along the tracks here, the future Potomac Yard Trail. So that would be an important connection. So there's a good bike network proposed, and I think as we get farther into detail, we'll be able to plan that out. The red here is the Metroway planned alignment, and the actual design of the Metroway and how that functions the road. I'm going to get a little bit more in detail in a second on that, but that is the route that it's planned for. Now, how we actually design the roadway is still under discussion. And I've also called out sort of the intersection improvements that we looked at earlier. Here is just to let you know kind of the new traffic signals that we're examining as part of this plan update, and this is the locations of those, as well as the purple shows you the alignment for the Metroway. So this is both for pedestrian safety, allowing pedestrians to cross the road we get into the metro station, get to the new areas, but also to, you know, we'll be timing these in coordination so that we can make sure that the roadway's functioning well. So the last two slides that I wanted to go over, this has been a really big piece of this plan, is how we're going to design Potomac Avenue. And there's sort of two different pieces of that. One is the first phase, which is everything east of Potomac Avenue, all that development. This is what's going to be coming before the Planning Commission and then over the next calendar year. This is what the small area plan is updating. And so we wanted to make sure we kind of look at, you know, that roadway and how that could be designed as we go forward. And then the second piece will be when everything develops west of there, and then the road will have to be looked at again. And that is anticipated probably in the next 10 to 15 years. But for this that's under consideration now, we wanted to, you know, look at the road. It's two lanes in each direction today, and if there's things that we could do differently to improve pedestrian safety, to make it more walkable. And so these are some of the criteria that we've draft criteria that we've come up with advisory group and the public, and we'll sort of feed into the recommendations of the plan. I think that you know, balancing all modes of transportation is going to be very important, and that's part of what this strives to do. The next graphic kind of shows you what we're currently looking at right now, which is to add parking to Potomac Avenue during the off-peak. So in the AM, we would have parking on one side and have three different travel lanes. In the PM, it would be the same condition, but on the other side. And then off-peak, we would have parking on both sides. So basically on the weekends and most times a day, you'd have parking. And this provides both, you know, additional parking to serve the new development, but also kind of protects pedestrians that are walking from the vehicle traffic and slows down the roadway. And so this is a condition that we're looking at as part of the study, and something that we could do into the interim until this ultimate condition, which this is the second phase, which is that piece of the plan that I talked about that's between Potomac Avenue and Route 1. When that development comes in, we need to look at the road again. And so I know this slide has a lot of bullets. It violates all PowerPoint rules, but I think we just want to make sure that, you know, we memorialize this because we did have a lot of discussion with the advisory group about these different characteristics. So when the development comes in the second phase, we want to relook at the road to see if how we want to design the BRT and make sure that's balanced with providing safe crossings for pedestrians. So that's kind of what we've been discussing, as well as making sure the bikeway and the bike network is well served. Right now there's a trail, but that might not be appropriate going forward. If we have development on both sides of the road, it might be more appropriate to have an on-street bike facility. So these are kind of things that we want to make sure we look at when that development comes in. And then in terms of next steps, we'll be continuing to get advisory group input. We'll come back to the Transportation Commission in May for endorsement, and then be going to the Planning Commission and City Council later this spring in June. So with that, any questions? I know I kind of went over that quickly, but
On slide 24, yes, where you showed the overhead of the alignment, if it is on-street biking, would the parking be like a barrier between the curb?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
Would, because I see it more and more in Arlington where they're okay, putting the travel lane, then parking lane, then on-street biking facility.
Right.
Right.
Protected bike.
So it's, yeah, protected bike.
Exactly.
That was actually exactly discussed. It to me.
So in this condition, we actually aren't proposing anything on-street for bicyclists. We're right now there's a path that's there today.
It's separated, and you'll leave it there.
Yeah, we would leave the path there. But and so that's the condition that would occur before that other side of Potomac Avenue is developed. But once that next side of Potomac Avenue comes in for redevelopment, the path may no longer be appropriate because we would have sort of this, you know, higher density condition. And that's when I think we would need to look at it again to see what type of bike.
To put in the protected bike lanes.
We would have to look at it.
Does that add more width, or is it about
it could,
the same?
It could, yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
it's could. More than a bike, a regular bike lane.
But there are also the streetscape dimension is 20 to 25 feet
going to be required, and so perhaps if a bike lane is what people want, maybe that could be part of that 20 to 25 foot speed skate.
And is a two-directional protected bikeway more space efficient than two separate sided lanes?
It can be, depending on the, yes, it can be. We typically would separate it. We would separate it from the parking, on-street parking. We'd also separate it from the pedestrians.
Right.
So we'd have to have those buffer areas.
But that would be in addition to, there already will be a separate bike and ped trail
in the park.
In the park, running along
the
trail. And that still hasn't been designed either. So that could be, you know, separated ped and then bike.
Yes, we have talked about that, the trail. But that the trail, I think, you can see it here. It's sort of that orange color, and it meanders. We're sort of looking at this at a high level. We haven't gotten down to the detailed design, but that will come before the planning commission when it gets to that level. We're looking at having a path that separates bikes from pedestrians, similar to the way that some parts of that. You'll notice that some parts of the trail on the south side have like a pedestrian walkway that's of a different.
Color?
Material.
Yeah.
But yeah. It doesn't have to necessarily have that same design. We have lots of options we can do.
Well, yeah, because your initial design showed the sidewalk 15 to 20 feet. There's where you could either put a separate bike facility there, which probably isn't a good idea because you get the pedestrian mesh, but you could take some of that width and put it on the street for protected, you know, like you said, there's a lot of options. We discussed that, so
yeah, I think for this trail is definitely a requirement through the park. It's just a question of we could have it similar to Jones Point Park, where there's actually a you know, asphalt area that's just for pedestrians that's separated from cyclists. So that's, we could look at that. There's lots of different ways.
Yeah, like I say, we're early on in looking at all the options. So I can tell you, all the bike commuters will use the trail along because there's no lights. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So anyway, that's on down the pike.
Any other questions?
Was the parking during the time when there is no development happening right there?
On the west, yeah, there'll be. So the parking condition that we're speaking of would be that first phase that's from Potomac Avenue. So it's this so if you're
so on the west side,
there would be no development yet.
It would still be the shopping center.
It would still be the existing condition, which is a parking lot. And then on the east side, that's where the development will occur for the first phase.
Similar to how Washington Street operates, except it's six lane, and this is four.
Exactly.
But it's the same idea. Comparable.
It's a similar condition.
Which
would
works.
You do HOV on the lane or no? Would it, with two lanes, does that not make sense?
I think we'd start with this and
see if it warrants it.
The HOV does carry its own.
Well, and then there's all the enforcement issues.
That's what I was saying.
I live on this street, so I live on Washington.
Yeah. Yes, right. You know,
I have some comments.
Yes,
you've probably heard them before, but I'll just keep saying them. In following the process, I think there's a lot of progress being made on the Potomac Avenue width functionality conversation. We're still not where I hope we will be, and maybe we won't get there, but I want to continue to push staff to consider just two travel lanes all the time for all of Potomac Avenue. And I know you also mentioned that down the line is considering that southern part where the development's already happened, and we're not really looking at a plan over it yet. But when we talk about the functionality of this section, and we talk about minimizing width in this section, it seems like we're sabotaging our own effort if we aren't thinking proactively at restricting the width of the lanes further south, because if it's a bottleneck, it's going to cause consternation for drivers, because the expectation is this sort of free flow all the way up. And so the sooner we can reconcile the two sections of Potomac Avenue, the better. And I just think that it's not that the vision for that street is not another Route 1, and so the extent to which we can plan into it and get people used to it being as pedestrian friendly as possible today, mm-hmm. it's going to be that way for us in the future. And if we, and vice versa, if we don't. Related to that, I believe, it's my personal opinion, that the current mode split assumption is too conservative. And what I mean by that is 60% non-auto mode split for a place that's so close to a metro station is probably not high enough for a non-auto mode split. And I know that it's comparable to Oakville Triangle assumptions and Old Town North assumptions, but neither Oakville Triangle nor Old Town North are as close to a metro station as this is going to be. And I'm not sure to what extent that mode split assumption plays into the trip generation analysis and the volumes on the roads and that sort of thing, but to the extent that it does, I think at least showing the variability that you might achieve if we achieve lower drive-alone node splits would help the community, staff, decision makers see what those roads might look like when we have 75% non-auto mode split, which is what you see in places like Crystal City and other areas of newer development around metro stations. So I know for a lot of people it's hard to believe, but these metro stations are achieving that, and I think that this one could, based on what we're creating there. I also just wanted to throw some pitches out there for things I've mentioned before, the importance of ensuring density around that metro station in that final land use plan, because that's going to support our transportation objectives here, but it's also going to support our tax revenue objectives and the vitality of this neighborhood. The importance of the connectivity of that bike trail for bike commuters, making sure it's safe and intuitive and I didn't realize, and I'm happy to hear that the implementation of that connection is a part of the plan overall, but it's probably going to be triggered by a later part of it. I'm not sure what the interim solution is going to be, because the later part is many years down the road, and if you're connecting the trail and increasing density here, you're also freeing up people to begin using this as their commute option. So the better you can train them and get them comfortable with it, the more likely they'll take it up as a route that's viable for them. And I just as sort of a sense of this, I was biking home the other day coming to Charles Houston for a meeting, and I usually hop off Slater's Lane from the Mount Vernon Trail right onto Fayette because I can just turn right there and get off Route 1 immediately. But this was the first time I thought, oh, I have to go east in the city instead of west in the city, so I have to stay on Route 1, and it was really awkward, and I was on Route 1, and I'm a confident cyclist, but Route 1 at night and during the commute rush hour is not where a cyclist wants to be. And
yesterday I passed. Seriously, I was like, what is this cyclist doing on Route 1?
Right, probably me. but man, and I got off as soon as I could, but I ended up on sidewalks because I was trying to get to this place that was west of Route 1 instead of east of Route 1, or east of Route 1 instead of west to my left. And I'm pointing this out because where this trail, it hits a river, I mean, 4 mile runner, that's what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's there.
Yep. Yeah,
it's 4 miles. Mm-hmm. When the connection is not made, if you're crossing Route 1 to get to the trail access point, it's not clear to me what the like near term, which is 10 years, mm-hmm. solution is. And 10 years is not a short period of time in terms of like building this out and then waiting for the second phase to build out and figuring out what all that looks like. So I just want to emphasize that the rationality of all that is going to make it really attractive, and it's going to encourage use of it in the way that we want to. And bike commuting is a much better alternative for managing our traffic in this area than people.
So you're specifically worried about the connection across Route 1?
Yeah.
Yes.
Up to the trail system that's in Arlington and parts north.
Okay.
Because this trail is going to nicely connect. We've talked about...
But the actual connection as a cyclist, how you get over Route 1 or how you...
Yeah. I mean, if that's the interim solution and that's all we've got going for us and we can't get it upgraded sooner than that, what's the... Like, do we have to do light improvements and other signage and things to make it so it's safe for people? Like, mm-hmm. if there's a way for traffic to stop in a sensible fashion so the bicyclists know how to get across. Yeah, I mean, just thinking about making it easy for people, because ultimately, the easier we can make all the optimal transportation decisions, the better our outcomes will be. And if we don't make those other options easy, people are going to default to the thing that they're most comfortable with, and that might be a car.
Yeah, you got a good point. I mean, there may be a possibility of building the trail on the east side next to the track that might be able to be put in.
And I think
before
that's
any
the
of the development,
condition,
you know,
right? But the future condition is supposed to be that, not. And it, but if the developer's not going to be willing to do it,
right.
Until the second phase.
Yeah, a lot of ifs there, but you have to consider those and say, hey, what's the best way to do this to get people used to doing it before it's all built up? Yeah. That is a point.
Yeah, this connection here is required of them. So continuing that trail like west, mm-hmm, is required of them, but that would be when that development comes in here, and as well as the improvement of this park, mm-hmm, as part of that. Sorry, it's not a very easy graphic to see, but it's in this area here, yeah, just south of the run. But yeah, that is a good point with the crossing of Route 1, and right now, if you want to make that crossing, you have to actually go into Arlington and go down and go underneath.
Right, the switchbacks.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. So that it's something to think about as we, you know, as we work through that process, that if there's a better connection, right, with Route 1 would be good. I think right now the plan is actually just showing them constructing a trail east of Potomac Avenue, not down.
Yeah, that's what, yeah, that picture looked, yeah, like. Yes. And I don't know if that's easy, hard, but I mean, it sounds better avoiding Route 1.
So I just need to understand better. You're talking about like Jack Taylor to the mattress warehouse, that connection, like at 4 mile run across Route 1?
Yeah. So that's the current condition. From the east side, you have to cross Route 1 right there at where the bridges all are, so, yeah, that you can get to the side where there's the underpass.
To get to Cord Kelly and all that.
Well, not go. Yes, you could go all the way that way, but you don't. You can also go across the bridge on the left hand side and go under the bridges,
right,
in that little loop-de-loop.
Yeah.
Without
on
going
north,
all the way.
North side of Fulmer
Run. I think the question is making it more direct.
Right.
Making
it
indirect.
There's an indirect way. You don't have to cross. There's a way to do it without crossing
right.
Route 1 today, but it's
you
indirect.
You have to cross Route 1 at grade from that side.
You don't have to.
You don't have
Which
to.
Which street cross street? I'm sorry, I mixed up too. Which cross street are we talking about?
Can you get to under?
So yeah. You can go right now. You can go up here
and go
then
under.
You can come down
right.
And then go underneath.
Right. That's Route 1,
yeah.
Though, right?
Yeah.
Right. But you have to be on the.
You have to be on the Arlington side.
No, you have
no.
to be on the west side of Route 1.
To start.
To get
even,
under.
Even on the east side,
the east
there,
side.
Is cr- there is
a... Yeah, the switchback.
The switchback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see
the
switchback
back
steps.
Yeah.
I'm talking
okay.
about like, where right. Harris
the
Harris
But I think
no.
the point,
right.
I think
no.
the point
no.
is that the, as a, I, what we
like
hear you saying is a more direct, safe...
The dealership,
safe
the jacket.
Right, and the switchbacks, I have to get off my bike to take that.
To do it.
So
supposed to look at it as a challenge. I think that's
right.
You do it enough, you get a handle for it.
But
just
for,
like to
I
do
guess it. What I'm saying is I like the implication here that there's a more direct
yeah.
connection being
Which,
built in by the development. It's just a shame that it's 10 years out according to the current funding/motivational structure. And I don't. Maybe that's something where we just got to get creative, and there's a way to fund it faster, or get like support from the developer to do it as an earlier phase with others, some other kind of support. But
well, I think it's helpful to hear from the community that that's a high priority because that will be helpful as we go into the next phase of the CDD and new conditions to help push that as a more near term.
Were there enhancements for that as part of the 4 mile run plan?
Not underneath Route 1. It was, I think, the...
On the Alexandria
there
side?
There actually are trail enhancements on the Alexandria side as part of 4 mile.
Well, the...
And then there's also the Commonwealth to Eads...
The Eads Bridge, which...
Yeah,
that's 2021.
That's also...
The last I saw.
that we don't have.
right.
Just making sure.
Wait,
well, Arlington says they have the money. Maybe it'll just go
no,
halfway.
They actually don't say they have the money.
No.
No one says they have the money for that.
but there's a couple vectors that are in the pipeline
yeah.
sort of to...
Well, there's plans. But
in plans, yes.
Money's the hard part. So yeah, it's yeah, that's something that we could look at and say, hey, is there something we can do before all this takes place to make it more direct and make it easier? And so is that something that the developer usually would pay for? Is that trail next to the railroad, or would that be a city expense?
No. You're thinking of the trail?
Could be.
Which
could be. Okay.
This trail is already required of the developer.
Okay.
Along the railroad. We're not.
Okay.
The city's not paying for that. And that would be constructed with this phase.
That'd be part of the TDM money, I assume.
It's just a requirement. It's actually not part of TDM. It's just a...
It's a requirement.
It's a development condition.
Okay.
So if the mode split was too conservative, wouldn't that also impact like parking minimums and densities and stuff that...
The parking is already set in the plan. The ratio is already set in the plan. They were set in 2010 and are largely consistent with actually our update for the residential section that we've already mm-hmm. done. So we will be looking at shared parking as part of this development, and that's consistent with the plan and also consistent with, you know, our transportation master plan. So they'll be, you know, having those ratios are already set. So it's not going to be affected by the...
So that's kind of the agreement between the developers that we did back in 2010 and said this is
the
ratio.
The plan. Yeah.
Okay.
It's in the plan. And
and it's a maximum.
It's
not
a maximum. Yeah, no minimums. It's maximums only, which is more progressive. And then we, on top of that, sort of looked at the residential and how that fits in, and we'll likely be bringing to the Planning Commission at the later date sort of the detailed parking, because they approve that at each stage.
Are they below those maximums significantly? Or?
I don't know that we have a final number yet. I think we're still working through
it. I think they're right around.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask, all those new lights on Potomac Avenue, is that going to significantly hurt the running time of the Metroway?
So we will need to time the lights to work with the Metroway. Mm-hmm. It's a balance of those two things. I think there's trade-offs. Making sure that people are able to cross the street as well as having that.
And I know there was talk with Metroway about traffic signal priority at some point.
Yes,
but
yes, exactly. We actually have an active project right now.
Yeah, that's kind of new, but it works in some cities right now. So.
Yeah, we are doing that currently on Route 1. We're working on that project, so that would continue up.
Oh, the other thing I want to say is I learned a new term recently, hide and ride. Instead of kiss and ride, where you find whatever available parking you can and then access the train station, you know. So that's definitely the concern of the neighborhoods west of Route 1 is the hide and ride problem.
All right.
The,
yes. We all learned a new term.
Yep.
Don't worry, the parking is pretty bad over there to begin with, so there's not going to be too many opportunities.
There
ain't nowhere to park.
If I hide my car at Target and then walk to Metro... You know, what's Target going to do to prevent me?
Oh, they'll figure a way sooner or later. If it gets too crowded and it affects their customer base, you bet they'll figure out a way.
They'll manage it.
Yeah. Because in Tyson's, they have like the arm gates and stuff like that, and they say like no parking over 2 hours and stuff. And so think of that Walmart near Spring Hill Metro.
It'll definitely have to be parking management.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, if there's no other questions, as I mentioned, we'll be bringing this back to you months for further consideration. And with that, I think we're on to other business.
Okay, I got one thing. Anybody else have any other business?
No.
I guess one question I have is, I know we set up a budget, you know, how much TDS spends in the plans, the long range plan, and whatever comes in, and you have a plan for FY17 of how you know what's on your agenda project wise, etc. I'm just wondering if it's it may be available, is how you actually spend the money as opposed to what the plan was. Is there something available that the commission can see, or is it something that you could update us with on occasion to see whether you actually, you know, I know things come up that you got to switch and do that, but I'm just curious to see how close, you know, your what the budget was as to what your execution was.
So the every annual budget that's produced shows what we were authorized to spend in the previous year, and then it shows our authorizations for future years. And then on the capital side, we also bring to council on a quarterly basis what's called a quarterly capital report that shows where we are in the process for each one of our capital projects, what's going to happen in the next quarter, what the big milestones are, and where we are on expenditures.
Usually on the capital projects, you know, that stuff doesn't probably change much because, you know, on the capital projects, those are big projects, and it's not something you can change your mind on because they're already approved and all that. It's, and operational side, you know, I don't know how much. You probably have some give and go on that, but just like changing an intersection that specifically Mount Vernon and Glebe, where that was recently done. I don't even know if that was on the list. I'm sure somewhere it was on the list, but you know, we all know that it seems like, you know, pedestrian gets killed, intersection gets fixed. And you
well,
and I
let's just make sure we understand though that the work that was done in Mount Vernon Glebe, there was
was that on the list?
Yeah. Well, some of it was on the books. Some of it was actually routine maintenance. That was on the books. That's what Tim was actually talking about. Actually, we do in every year we do what's called the capital facilities maintenance program for all of our sort of big transportation expenditures. We do it for sidewalks. That's sort of like how we get our roadway resurfacing list. Most of the work that we did out on Mount Vernon and Glebe was rewiring, and it was rewiring that had been planned. The stuff that we added, we had already added pedestrian improvements and crosswalks as part of the resurfacing of Glebe. We just had to tweak some signal timing to actually make sure that we could do the LPI.
Lane, the wiring, is that coming under, is that a capital project?
The what?
The lane of the wire, you know, your cable, right?
You're talking about the fiber optic?
Yeah. Project? Or is that something else? When you said laying the wiring.
That's something else.
Yeah, oh, that's yeah. Laying the wiring in the road to totally the sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Long wiring.
Yeah. That's just what he's speaking of is more maintenance.
Yeah.
The other project is laying fiber optic, and that's a capital project that we
but
have.
What you also might be talking about is, are you talking about the road sensors? Is that what you're saying? So that's done in conjunction
with the paving. Right. Yeah. Okay. Is that what you meant when you said laying the wiring?
No. What we were doing out at Mount Vernon and Glebe, we had to actually rewire the intersection itself. So there's conduit that runs all underneath that intersection that connects the
traffic
signals
okay.
with the lights themselves. And we basically went in there and took out a whole bunch of old cable and replaced it with brand new cable, which improves the functionality of the. Probably didn't notice this, but every time it rained, that signal went into flash. Part of the reason that it wasn't every time it rained, but many times it rained. Part of that is because the cabinet itself was all old equipment inside there. So that's really what enabled us to do all that work.
So that was most of the work that really was done there.
That was the majority of that work.
No, I know it's. You hear criticism that, you know, hey, pedestrian gets killed, then they fix the intersection. But in that case, that was already planned. It was in the works. You had some of the paving was already done.
Well,
You tweaked the signals was probably the only.
I understand the perception that someone is injured and we make changes.
Yeah.
I think it needs to be clear. We've been very proactive in the city for a number of years.
I understand that. I'm just saying there's that criticism out there.
I understand.
Yeah.
But it's not like the city hasn't been proactive on a lot of levels making actual improvements. We definitely look for any opportunity we can when we do have existing funding to be able to sort of maximize the improvements that we can make, though.
Yeah. Understand. In fact, I just saw one today where Pendleton and right down from Washington.
Towards the water or away?
Yeah, toward the water. They have they took away part of that lane, and there's a bump out there.
That's a capital project we have to.
Yeah, that's
a project.
And you're doing that before you repave that street, because that street, I'm sure, is going to be repaved soon, because it's pretty bad.
Pedestrian signals and bus stop improvement project.
Yeah, that's part of that. Okay, you've heard that before. I just wanted to hear you say that. Yeah, most of that stuff was in line to be done, so I can answer the question when people say that. I'll say, hey, no, okay. Anything else? And I take a motion for.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
That's the one I was looking for.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
I need to study a map. I'm still not picturing where you're talking.